So now we come to the fourth feast, and it would follow as the first feast, the feast of first fruit, which pertained to, I think, the resurrection of the body of Christ, was a barley harvest. This is the first grain that was harvested in Israel in the year. And so now we come to the second kind of harvest crop, and this is going to be wheat. So again, we're thinking about a harvest. Again, we're thinking about a grain, but we're going from barley grain to wheat grain. And it's only natural that I think a person would ask, why did God pick this day to celebrate or to commemorate this kind of feast? Why did God pick this day? Why not a few days before? Why not a few days after? Why this specific day did God choose to celebrate? Now, this feast has been given many names. One, and I may get this wrong, the Feast of Shavuot. That may be wrong there. That word Shavuot is Hebrew for weeks. It's also called the Feast of Harvest, Exodus 23:16. It's called the Day of First Fruit, Numbers 28:26. It's called the Feast of Weeks, Exodus 34:22. It's called the Feast of Ingathering, and it's also called the Day of Pentecost, because Pentecost in Greek means 50. So now we'll look at the specific instructions that God gave Moses regarding this feast. So I guess I'll primarily refer to it either as Pentecost or as the Feast of Weeks. Leviticus chapter 23, verses 15 through 17. Leviticus 23, verses 15 through 17. God tells you exactly what day this is to be commemorated on. And you shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day that you were brought out the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. Even until the morrow, after the 7th Sabbath, shall ye number 50 days. And you shall offer a new meat offering unto the Lord. You shall bring out of your habitation 2 wave loaves, 2 loaves of bread, and they shall be made out of fine flour, that is, of the wheat, and they shall be baked with leaven. They are to be the first fruits given to the Lord from the wheat harvest. In other words, the day after the Sabbath of the Passover would be a Sunday. That's the very same day that Christ was rose. That's also the very same day as the Feast of First Fruit. Just 50 days on down the road, you come to this feast, the Feast of Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks. But why 50 days? Well, to begin with, the wheat is now beginning to ripen in the land. But, I mean, you could have probably enough wheat to be found somewhere in Israel on the 49th, or the 50th, or the 51st, or 52nd, or 53rd day, and celebrate this feast. Why did God pick the 50th day? And from this wheat that was gathered, you'd make 2 loaves of bread. Again, it's going to be a Sunday celebration, as was the Feast of First Fruit. This Feast of Weeks of Pentecost is also going to be a Sunday celebration. So why did God find 50 to be a significant time, significant number to celebrate? I don't know. I'm going to give you a guess. Jewish tradition states that this was the day following the original Passover when the Israelites came out of Egypt, wandered through the wilderness. This was the day they arrived at Mount Sinai and God gave them the Ten Commandments. Now that's what tradition has always said regarding this day and why it's so significant. And for that reason, it has another name, the feast of the giving of the law. And this is one thing Jewish people refer to. So on this day, God gave the people a gift. The gift He gave them was the gift of His law, which represents His care, His concern, and His kindness, and His wisdom. This would also be the birthday of the Jewish nation. This is when they became the Jewish people of God. It would be thus the day that God would remember. It would be a day that Israel would remember. It was on this day that God chose to manifest Himself to all the people, to speak to them, so to speak, who had been redeemed from bondage, who had escaped death through the Passover lamb, and now He comes to visit with them and to give them a gift. Now, I'll come back to this later on as we get further on down and looking at the Pentecost that followed the resurrection of Christ, who was the Passover lamb. I'll compare that day with this day, but I'll not do it now. But let's read Exodus chapter 19, verse 1 through 3. In the third month, when the children of Israel had gone forth out of the land of Egypt, that day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. For they had departed from Rephidim and were come to the desert of Sinai and had pitched in the wilderness, and there Israel encamped before the mount. Moses went up unto God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel. Jump to verse 11. Be ready on the third day, the Lord will come down from heaven in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. Verse 16. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mount, and the voices of a loud sounding trumpet, and all the people that were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought forth the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the foot of the mount. And Mount Sinai was altogether filled with smoke, because the Lord had descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. Verse 22. Not that, 18's last verse. So God makes a grand entrance to the people. And they are amazed and they are frightened. And you know the story. Moses goes up on the mountain, is given two tablets of stone, carved 10 commandments, returns back to the people. This was when God gave Israel a gift of the law. This is also the day when God makes a covenant. And it's very important for us to remember this now. God makes a covenant with this people on this day. So this marks a first for God. It marks a first for these people. His first covenant. And it's their first time for God to show such favor on any kind of people. They become, in a certain sense, a first fruit. This is a first in several respects. God gained for Himself a first. And He wanted to grant the people a first. And so He spells out what it is that He wants. What He wants is fruit. This is also very important to understand. He tells them the kind of fruit that He wants to gain and receive from them. He has brought them out, redeemed them as the Passover lamb. They have gathered together now, and He says, what I want from you is fruit. You say, what kind of fruit? Exodus chapter 19, verse 4. You have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, here's what he wants. Here's the fruit. If you will obey my voice, and you will, now here it is, keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, and you shall be unto me a holy nation. Now the fruit of obedience, the fruit of holiness from the entire nation is what God desired of this agreement, of this meeting, of this coming down and speaking to the people. In return for what they will give him, which is obedience, he will then give them his favor and his blessing and make them a peculiar treasure unto him. Now, this was stated before the covenant was ratified, but there's going to be a covenant required that the people might agree to this. The people's response, verse 7, and Moses came and called the elders of the people and laid before them the words of the Lord, which he had commanded them. And all the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto the Lord. This agreement is made official and binding in Exodus chapter 24, verse 3 through 8. And Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice, all the words which the Lord has said we will do. Now that's the fruit that God desires of this people. That's the fruit he desires of the covenant. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, that is the laws, and rose up early in the morning, built an altar, according to the 12 tribes of Israel, using 12 stones. 6, and Moses, or 5, and he sent young men of the children of Israel, and they offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen of the Lord. And Moses took half of the blood and put it in basins, and half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And we're going to come back eventually one of these days to the Lord's Supper. And he talks about his blood being a New Testament. And we'll get to that later, a New Covenant, signed by blood, his blood. And he took the book of the covenant, which states all the laws, and he read it in the audience of the people, the laws again, and they said again, all that you have in your book, all that the Lord has said, we will do, and we will be obedient. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant. The covenant is blood ratified. The blood of the covenant, which the Lord hath made with you concerning all these words. From this time on now, Israel is known in the Bible as God's covenant people. And it is what the covenant promises God that interests us in this feast of Pentecost, our Feast of Weeks. Again, it promised him the fruit of holy living, the fruit of righteousness, the fruit of obedience to his commandments. For that reason, I think this was a very special day to God's memory. So 50th day, he picks this day. The day as they left Egypt, they come to Mount Sinai. This is a very significant, it's a day of first for God. The first time he gives a covenant, the first people to promise him obedience, the first time he gets the nation, he'll bless and favor in such an unusual way. It's a day that God says, I'm going to remember in the feast. And so I'm going to, after Passover and the others, I'm going to set this day aside and we're going to commemorate this together, I and they. And thus we have, I think, reason for the 50th day being chosen by God to establish this feast. And so God had established or secured for himself a nation of people who were dedicated to building their society around His commandments. They would be His people. He would be their king. He would have them as His subjects. And His laws would be used to govern everything that went on in His kingdom. This was not true of any other kingdom on the face of the earth. This was the first one where He'd get to be the king. And where He would get to lay down all the laws, and all the people would agree His laws, and only His laws would be those that would be obeyed. So God anticipated from this covenant that He would get a bountiful harvest of chosen fruit. Again, the fruit is that of righteous living. And so that's why I think God picked this day to establish His feast. I have no way to prove this. It reminds them of their covenant when they celebrate this feast, I guess. It should remind them of their obligation, their promise of righteous living. I'm not sure it does, but I think that was the intent of the feast. And truly, the purpose of the bread offering, baked bread. So that's where our attention is focused on in this harvest. It's the wheat taken and used to make the bread. Now, we're told that there were two loaves of bread. Remember in Leviticus 23:17, there are two loaves of bread. And what's so unexpected and puzzling to me is that they were both leavened bread. That is, they were had yeast in them, and they were allowed to rise, and then they were, it'd be good bread to us, good to eat. Unleavened bread's hard. But you see, we just went through the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which was symbolic, I think, of Christ. In the Bible, leaven is often compared to sin, to that which is corrupt, where the bread begins to get corrupted and it puffs up, ferments. And so sometimes the Bible uses the word leaven to illustrate sin. That's how sin works in our lives. Puffs us up, corrupts us. And so, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, Christ was sinless, so therefore you would have no leaven. But then you come to this feast, and you wonder, why would God have two loaves of bread in which sin is symbolic of something present in the two loaves of bread, and God says, put it there. And so it's kind of confusing. One feast portrays Christ as sinless, and the other portrays this bread as sinful. Contaminated. In other words, there is a symbolic reference that there is sin connected with this bread. Now, God did not deliver from Egypt a sinless people. The Passover spared them from the death angel, but the Passover did not make them sinless. Did not make them perfect. They were forgiven. They were spared, but they were not made sinless. The people, when they made a covenant with God at Mount Sinai, that did not make them sinless. The covenant did not leave them perfect. The law God gave them told them what God wanted them to do. Problem was, God didn't give unto them a desire to do it. Now they said, we will do it. That was with their mouth. But they had a heart that says, no, we're not going to do it. In other words, there is still in man this sinful nature. Under this covenant, who has come out of the Passover, he still has this sinful nature. He still is prone to do that which is wrong. He is still prone to break his promise to God. There is still within him the lust of the flesh. How's he going to overcome this? How's he going to have victory over this? You see, Passover did not give him any solution. Did not give him any help. Did not give him any strength. All God says was, here's what I want you to do, now you do it. By your own effort, by your own willpower, by your own determination, you obey these commands. Well, You have to make yourself behave by your own sheer strength. And with a sinful nature, that's not going to work. Because your sinful nature is going to be stronger than your willpower. And you can't make yourself behave. Even though you say so with your mouth, the heart is not as sold on being holy as you may claim you are. And so what we have here symbolized God expecting fruit from an unholy people. The bread symbolizes Israel, the loaf of bread. The leaven says here is a people who are by nature sinful. And I want to receive from the sinful people holy fruit. How is that possible? How can you get holy fruit from a sinful fruit tree? God didn't tell you, this is what I want. This is what I want. They still are sinners, and I still want the fruit. And this is quite a dilemma, both for God and for the people. Because God's not going to get his fruit, and the people are not going to be willing or able to be obedient. But God still says, from a people who have been redeemed and yet have a sinful nature, I still expect them to be holy. Well, you say, yeah, but preacher, that's one loaf of bread. How about the other one? There are two loaves. Well, the story of Jonah should give us a clue as to what the other loaf of bread would symbolize, represent. Jonah was a Jew who disagreed with God. Because God told him to go preach to Nineveh. Who were the Ninevites? They were not Jews. They were another nation. Actually, they were a nation that was an enemy of Israel. Nineveh representing what? Gentiles. The Gentiles. And Jonah was told, even though he did not want to go on down there anyway. And the preacher, because God loved them. God wanted to give them a Passover. God wanted to save them. God wanted to forgive them. God wanted to include them in his family. And Jonah said, no way. You have one family, and that's Israel. And you have no right to any other family. No other family deserves you. And I'm not going to go down and tell them. I don't want them saved. I don't want them included. Of course, you know the story. Jonah finally went anyway because God put the pressure on him. But on numerous occasions, I think Israel was informed by God that his plan was not just for them, but his plan was for the world. And I think what he planned to do was just take Israel and use them as the example of a nation that believed in the true God, an example of a nation who prospered under obeying the laws of God. And as other nations saw this, they would say, we want in on this good thing. In other words, Israel was to be the missionary nation, to go out and to preach to all the other people, the Gentile people, God's laws, God's goodness, and God's Passover possibilities. Psalms 22:27. Psalms 22:27. All the ends of the world shall remember and turn to the Lord, and all the kindreds of the nations shall one day worship before him. See, now we include two kinds of people here. Not only do the Israelites worship God, but now we are saying the whole kingdom, all the nations in the world have a right and invited to bow down and worship him. That's Jew and Gentile. Psalms 67. Psalm 67. Verse 1. God be merciful unto us and bless us and cause your face to shine upon us. That thy way, now notice, first of all you have Israel. God be merciful to us, Israel, and bless us, Israel, and cause your face to shine on us, Israel, that your way may be known upon the earth, and your saving health may be known among all the nations. Now you're in the Gentiles. Let the people praise thee, O Lord. Let all the people praise thee. Let the nations be glad and sing for joy, for thou shalt judge the people righteously and govern the nations upon the earth. Psalms 86, 9. All nations whom thou hast made shall come and worship before thee, O Lord, and shall glorify thy name. You only have two classifications of people in the Bible. One, Jews. Two, Gentiles. God has divided mankind into two groups. And that's it. Zechariah. Zechariah is near the end of the Old Testament. Zechariah. Chapter 2, verse 10. Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion. For lo, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith the Lord, and many nations shall be joined to the Lord in that day, and shall be my people. And I will dwell in the midst of thee, both people, and thou shalt know that the Lord of hosts has sent me unto thee. So even though God will welcome Gentiles, what does God find when he does? The same problem he has with the Jews. The Gentiles that come in will also have the sinful nature. Just do with the Jews. You have two loaves of bread. Both have leaven. God can draw from two sources of people, one Jew, one Gentile, both got a common problem. Both have leaven in their nature. Both have sin in their lives. And God asks of both groups the same thing. I want from you holy, righteous, living or fruit. Now that's easier promised than it is accomplished. And God continually finds, as he begins to deal with the nation of Israel, they're not going to keep the covenant. He keeps telling them, obey me, and they keep breaking his commands. They don't have the willpower, they don't have the ability to keep his commands. They don't have the desire, they don't have the interest, and so the leaven in them blocks them from giving God the fruit that he has promised by the covenant. But he doesn't say, well, since I can't get the fruit, I'll just lower the standards. He doesn't do that. He keeps saying to a people who cannot do it, do it. Which really is frustrating. Both to those who tried and to God himself, I would assume. But we're going to come to another Pentecost. And it's going to solve the whole problem that we're now facing. You're still going to have the bread that's got leaven in it. Still got the bread with the sinful nature, but you're going to have a way now, after this Pentecost experience, you're going to have a way now for God to get his fruit, which he could not get at this time in history. Judges chapter 2, verse 20, speaks of a common complaint that God has against Israel throughout the Old Testament. Joshua 2, chapter 20. Judges. Judges 2, chapter 20. Judges 2, chapter 20. I'll get there eventually. Like he's ending up in Joshua. All right, 2:20. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he said, because this people hath transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and they have not hearkened to my voice. Therefore, they have not kept their promise. They have not given me the fruit of righteousness that I desired, and given them the Passover, bringing them out of death, delivering them, making them my people. I'm not getting what I wanted. I'm not getting what they promised me. I'm not getting my fruit. And so you have now in this fourth feast, this whole dilemma being pictured by God. The feast is not canceled. He never stops telling the people, even though they don't obey His commands, He never says, well, you don't have to anymore. I know you can't, so just forget it. He doesn't say that. But He says to people who still have a sinful nature, I want you to be obedient to My commands. And we're going to stop there because we're going to push on and we're going to find that God has provided a way. We're going to go to the book of Ruth. And then we're going to go to the Pentecost experience after the resurrection and ascension of Jesus Christ. Father, we're thankful this day as we continue our progress through this look at the Feast of Israel, that we can get a better understanding of not only Your desires and Your plans, but what You have provided for us to make possible that You can gain from these two loaves the very fruit that You desire, how it is possible for this to happen. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.